So before I get started properly into my talk, I just want to say two things. Firstly, I'm kind of on the cusp of youth and seniority in Triratna terms, so it's nice to be part of this evening. I also just wanted to say that I spent many enjoyable evenings in here whilst I was studying Buddhism too with some of you, so it's interesting to have the tables turned. Okay, so into my talk. I was shopping online the other day, and you know the way these days, but with targeted advertising, you kind of get spammed with a lot of ads for stuff that you're supposedly interested in. So as a single woman in my mid-30s, these usually consist of like ads for dating apps or fertility treatments. But the internet took a break from casually judging my lifestyle and instead recommended me a book. And the book was entitled When Buddhists Attack. So I'm interested that it recommended that to me. Anyway, so I chortled at that and then I had a look at what it was. And it was a history of Aikido. Fair enough. But the title got me thinking. And it got me thinking about what it is that I find most inspiring about Buddhism. So a lot of people might think of a Buddhist as someone who kind of sits around, chillaxes, with a bowl of lentils. But I think we know that there's a bit more to it than that. So I reckon that Buddhism can be quite strong and quite fiery, actually. And I like that. And the thing that probably I find most inspiring about Buddhism is its stance of courageous compassion. So what I want to talk to you about today is courageous compassion, tough love, and when compassion means saying no. So I used to be blown about by every wind. I was like the girl at school that all the boys in the class would pick on. Principally, I reckon, because they knew they could get like a really explosive and like dead entertaining reaction out of me. And I used to be really driven by what in Buddhist terms you would call the worldly wind of praise and blame. And I was very needy for approval. And this put me in a vulnerable position. And one of the particularly vulnerable things about it was that it made me quite susceptible to gaslighting. And I don't know if people are familiar with that term, but gaslighting is when somebody tells you that your reality is invalid. So they might say to you, you're too sensitive. Don't be stupid. You can't think that. You're overreacting. You're crazy. And this is tied in with the approval seeking because, like, if you're, like, really needy for someone else's approval and they're telling you all this stuff, you kind of got to believe them, right? You've got to buy into it because that's what you need to do to get their approval. And that was really painful. Like, it was really painful to believe all that stuff about myself. And it meant that I was very open to being treated really badly. So learning to meditate was very helpful because it put me in touch with my thoughts and feelings. So I used to be quite unaware, in particular, of what was going on in my body. I used to live inside my head, and my head was kind of full of rumination all the time. Meditating and also just mindfulness in general helped me to kind of see how I was at any moment of the day. So that rather than just reacting, I could kind of feel in my body when a situation was becoming like overwhelming for me, and I could sort of mindfully take the best course of action before I just got to a point of like total reactivity and just, you know, just reacting. So with that kind of clarity has come a better understanding of compassion. So I was brought up with the idea that when you love somebody, you put them first. And I used to do that. I would put other people in front of myself all the time. And it wasn't just like other people in general now. It was like specific people who were close to me, and I would put them in front of myself every single time. And I would kind of ignore myself, and I would also ignore the other 6 billion people on the planet. And I don't think that was such a great way to live, actually. So practicing the metta bhavana and learning about compassion in the Buddhist sense was very helpful. The way that you kind of start with yourself and that you take it out. And you don't just take it out to like the good-looking dude who's hanging on your arm at that particular moment, but you take it out to kind of like strangers in the street. So developing clarity and developing a more balanced understanding of compassion has helped me know when it is the right time to say no. Because there is a yes in compassion, and there is also a no. No to abuse, no to violence, no to misogyny, no to prejudice of all kinds. And it kind of takes just as much guts to find that no as it does to find the yes. And I ain't good at saying no. I'm not good at saying no at all. And I used to have to get so kind of worked up and so angry and so like self-righteous before I could bring myself to say no. And these days, I can kind of say no, more from like a stance of compassion, because sometimes the kindest thing that you can do is to say no. So I have a little example. So a few months ago, I was expecting a visitor. And I was a bit like nervous about this because me and my visitor had some kind of difficult communications in the run-up to the visit. So I did what every good Buddhist should do in this scenario and put my visitor into the fourth stage of my metta bhavana. So there I was in my room trying to sort of like drum up some goodwill. And I got to the fourth stage and I was kind of halfway through it and I heard a knock at the door. So I went downstairs and I opened the door and it was my visitor, right enough, right on cue. She'd arrived a little early. Now, as soon as I opened the door, my visitor kind of started yelling at me. And I was a bit taken aback because, like, I'd expected it to be difficult to visit, but I hadn't expected that. She really kind of laid right into me. And I think in that situation, usually my response would be one of two things, either to sort of, like, yell back, or perhaps to kind of launch into sort of profuse but, like, insincere apologies. But on this occasion, having just been doing my metta bhavana, I had this kind of like sense of like firm rootedness that started sort of in my feet and kind of come up through my body. And what came out of my mouth was I just said, "Stop shouting at me." And then I invited her in and I fixed her a cup of tea. And then later we had a conversation about the issue. But in that particular moment, I knew that the most compassionate thing that I could do was to say no. And I said no, not really to her, but to the verbal abuse, which is what that was. So that leads me on to what I want to say next, which is that when we want to say no to a particular behaviour, and we want to say yes to the person behind that behaviour, that takes a lot of patience and commitment. And something that helps me kind of maintain a stance of compassion in this kind of situation, curiously, is the idea of no fixed self. So when I first heard this idea, when I started coming to the Buddhist Center, I felt very alarmed. I wasn't sure I liked the sound of it. But then when I thought about it some more, I felt actually really reassured. So part of my experience involves having someone close to me who has struggled with mental illness and addiction. And that's a situation in which there's a lot of oscillations between different states. So in mental illness, you've often got like oscillations between like depression and mania, or like between a dissatisfaction and sort of rage, or into states like psychosis or paranoia, and then out again. And addiction, well, there's a lot of falling off the wagon and getting back on, and falling off the wagon and getting back on, and round we go. And as the family member in that kind of situation, like, you experience a lot of emotions, right? All, and my emotions in that situation would just be all over the shop at different times. So that was a very clear example to me of no fixed self in the other person and also in myself, to go through all these different states and these different changes all the time. And I used to feel like I was on a roller coaster. No. I used to feel that my loved one was on a roller coaster, and that I had to ride that roller coaster with them. And something that I've kind of realized in recent years is that I don't got to get on the roller coaster. And these days what I do instead is I kind of hang out at the bottom of the roller coaster by the ticket booth. But as when I witness somebody boarding a roller coaster, what I like to do these days is hand them a bungee cord. And they can hold onto one end of the cord, and I'll hold onto the other. And as they're riding that roller coaster, my arm is being dragged around all over the shop. I'm tracking all of their movements, but I am holding fast, and I am staying firm, and I am absolutely rooted to the spot. And that kind of healthy detachment helps me maintain a stance of compassion without getting burnt out. And all of this involves acceptance. Acceptance of the other person and all of the complexity, instead of trying to like reactively change them. And acceptance of myself and my feelings in those kind of situations, which can be extreme and complex. And I think that there is a real strength in being able to hold all of that. So I reckon, in summary, that tough love is big love, because it involves radical acceptance. So, that, folks, is it. And that is me. And that is why I'm not quite a Buddhist, but why I keep on coming. And it would seem the Sangha, what you might call refuge. Okay. I'm done.